Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk, intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Good Saturday afternoon. Thanks for catching our drift. Pat Tavolacci and Joe Vollmer in for the Wizard of Whitmore Lake, Gary Wellings. At the Daily Drift, Gary goes over the stories and puts on the Daily Drift all week long. These are the stories you will not see from the mainstream media. Go to www.thedailydrift.com to see these articles and see why Common Sense Media provides the real perspective of what is happening locally, here in the state of Michigan, nationally, and globally. And Joe, who we got to sponsor this hour?
Well, we got Aero Facility Services sponsoring this half hour. Since 1945, companies have been trusting their building investment to the professionals at Aero. Aero can service any size commercial, industrial, or institutional facility in Southeast Michigan. And here's the best part, Pat. Aero isn't just advertising on the drift today. They're doing better than that. They've got a part-time position opening, so they would welcome calls to Vicki Fisher on 586-759-3700, or you can write her at vfisher@aerocompanies.com. And I should probably spell that. Aero is A-A-R-O companies.com.
Outstanding. A local company hiring people, Joe.
You know, it's a good thing to see.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
You know, someone comes in there, you start with this part-time position they got open now, who knows where it'll lead? Work hard.
That's right. Well, we're going to start locally this afternoon. And the Brighton City Council approved, and Joe and I are Brighton residents, a three-year tentative agreement with the Clerical Department of Public Service and the two police unions. And under the contracts, the employees will receive a 1.5% pay increase each year. Employees would contribute 5% of their compensation to their pension, and they continue making benefits to the health care benefits. So, okay, what does that mean to me? The question that I have for you, Joe, and that's something that I wanted to talk about here, is why are local, state, municipalities continuing to fund pensions?
Yeah, if you look at the private sector, okay, it used to be in this country, and I'm not a pension history expert, but it was when you went to a company, a pension was part of the program. That's how it seemed to have operated. And some of my early jobs that I had still had pension plans.
Sure.
Okay. Now in the private sector, when you start with a company, chances are there is no pension. You are given an opportunity to contribute to a 401k,
right?
And companies will match that up to a certain percentage that'll vary from company to company. And so they help you save for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. My mother worked for the city of Livonia, and 20 years ago, they changed from a pension contribution and moved all that money into a 401k. And my mother's retired, and she's doing quite well, living well on her 401k that invested in what she chose, various markets to invest in. And here it works. That's what we should be doing here, not with these underfunded pension plans that we continue to hear about.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you look at, I didn't do the fact check yet, but I heard a rumor this week that some pension funds have been frozen at Chrysler. And I, like I said, I didn't get to do the fact check on that. But, you know, you hear about it again and again where people plan on, depend on their pension someday, and then it's suddenly not there.
That's right.
Okay, I'd rather have something like a 401k that, you know, I can control and I know that it's not going to just magically get pulled out from under my feet.
Yeah, absolutely. So you look at what Kevin Orr is doing in Detroit. The first phone call is to the unions. We don't have enough money for the pension that we agreed to give you for all these years, and now I want to go after it. So the folks that have been relying on that year after year are going to be seized. At the end of the day, they're going to get a portion of what they thought that they would have forever. It's just nonsense to me, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, I have, like as I mentioned, from one of my employers that I worked for basically the first 13 years of my career, I have a pension supposedly coming from them. But you can guarantee you, I'm not banking on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you ask all the Ford, you know, Ford Motor Company is one of the companies that's saying, look, I want to get out of this. They've offered all their retirees an opportunity to get out of that pension, roll that money into a 401k, take an immediate payout now. They're, in other words, they're managing their money. We don't want local, state, and federal governments managing our money for us. We know what that leads to. So this to me, great for the folks. They got a good contract. Everybody, all the services in Brighton keep happening. But at the end of the day, we shouldn't be funding these things, Joe.
No, and they need to, you know, our public sector needs to look after the best practices from the private sector.
Absolutely.
And that should be their model. Not bad practices from the private sector, because there's plenty of those too. But look at how the best companies are doing it and model after them.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll stay in the state. You know, Gary mentions pretty much every show, Michigan Capital Confidential. If you're not reading Michigan CapCon, you need to be. And this story is from Stephen Horowitz. I did not know this, Joe, but there's a movement called Bow Not. Give you a dollar if you can tell me what that stands for.
Well, I'll take your dollar, because that means back off Walmart, not our town.
Okay, so this is where a local Whitehall Township in Muskegon Township or Muskegon County is trying to back off the building of a Walmart in their area, and the reason is because of all the local stores that would be affected. And you've heard this argument before, and we'll get into the whole Walmart thing here in a minute. But you know, opponents of Walmart are always talking about, it destroys local business. It claims that the actual evidence, though, however, says that when Walmart moves in, there's a short-run loss of local businesses. But within short order, Walmart begins to attract new, different businesses, restaurants, as an example, other products and services. And oh, by the way, they're forcing more competition. Competition is good. Competition is why we live in a free market society. So the question is, Joe, and I don't shop at Walmart, okay? I just don't, right?
I think I had to go in there once or twice myself.
Right, and it's not because, you know, they're paying $9 and change an hour, which, by the way, is more than minimum wage. It's not because they've got over a million employees and one of the biggest employers here in the United States. It's just, it's not convenient for me. So I still go after the local guys, local hardware store, the local supermarkets, etc. But we don't want these people deciding what competition comes in when we know, if you've been by any Walmart store and you see the haircut place, the liquor store, the gas station, the restaurants. I mean, this is providing jobs. And we should be all about that, right, Joe?
Yeah, you know, and I have a little bit of history in this area. And basically, I didn't get a chance to follow up with some of my buddies. But, you know, for the past 8 years, you know, I've worked with a client in Woodland Park, Colorado, which is up in the mountains above Colorado Springs. And it's a small type of town, very similar, I'm sure, to Whitehall. And they had this exact same thing happen. They had a Walmart move in just a few years ago. And I'm gonna put in a call to find out, you know, from those residents of that city, what has been the final result of it? What have they right. seen personally? Because I know it was just like this. They were very against that Walmart coming to town.
Yeah, sure. And if you've got an opinion on this, please call 734-822-1600. We want to hear from you. Again, we are reporting what's out there. Again, Common Sense Radio, we want you guys to weigh in and see. So a little bit more factoids on the Walmart. You know, the normal store creates anywhere from 300 to 400 jobs. They get paid above minimum wage. Distinguishes them from local businesses that, and I'm reading from the article, that normally cannot afford much more than minimum wage. So Jobs at Walmart are hard-paying jobs, good-paying jobs. Hard work is expected. There's success stories left and right about folks that rise through the ranks in a certain department, stocking shelves to a manager position, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to, I think, take hold of competition in our marketplace and keep it going.
Yeah, but I'm not going to sit here and say I love everything about the idea of this sort of competition. You know, I have a standard too where I'm not in favor of massive imports from China.
Sure.
And, you know, Walmart, by all accounts, is guilty of that. And so I'm not going to stand up here and say, hey, I'm supporting everything that's about Walmart.
No, sure. But that's your prerogative. Yeah. You have the opportunity, whether Walmart goes into Whitehall Township or not, you have the opportunity of going to that particular store or going somewhere else. That's the beauty of it, right?
You're absolutely correct on that account.
Yeah. So, you know, let's keep it real here. So we want to move on now a little bit to a national story. You may or may not have heard of a gentleman named Edward Snowden. He is a, for all intents and purposes, committed theft of government property, unauthorized communication of national defense information, and willful communication of classified communication intelligence information. That's what he's been charged with by federal prosecutors. And we're going to play a clip right now. From Good Morning America that starts kind of the prelude of whether we're going to get this guy from China or not. Derek?
U.S. officials are asking Hong Kong police to arrest him, but officials here have been almost silent, saying only that they will act in accordance with the law. Despite a warrant for his arrest, Edward Snowden still has options. He could flee if another country will take him. He could also seek asylum. That could trigger a legal process that could take months, some say years. Snowden is entitled to legal representation here for free. One legislator tells me there is a scenario in which Snowden's appeal against extradition could reach Hong Kong's highest court. That could take 5 years or more.
So in the background where she's talking from Hong Kong, they're showing folks parading with pictures of this individual, and now he's the ultimate martyr. Are we going to get this guy back from China and elicit swift justice or not, Joe?
I mean, if I had to make my guess, I would think that the United States will get him back from China. I would think that the United States has the power over China to do such a thing. I'm not suggesting what our U.S. government could or should do. But I mean, all you have to do is stop the boats coming over from China for about 10 minutes. The Chinese government would bend.
All right. I'm betting on the same thing, but I'm betting on it being a lengthy process. This guy is going to be, it's going to be a charade. Okay. And what troubles me is here's a private contractor. And oh, by the way, one of 483,000 people that have top secret clearance in our government that are private. Don't work for the United States. They work for the contractors like Booz Hamilton that this particular individual works for. And this guy puts a thumb drive in a government computer and walks it out in his, allegedly, okay, in his briefcase. How is that possible?
Well, you know, I don't know what this guy's age is. He looks pretty young from the photos,
yeah.
And I'm sure I could have found out. And I believe that he was at Booz Allen Hamilton only a very short amount of time. Now, I know people at Booz Allen Hamilton and some of the other companies like that in Washington, D.C. I can't imagine, first of all, someone as young and as new on the job as I believe he was having the kind of access that he clearly had. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And two, I think you mentioned the number of people.
Yeah, 483,000. That's all.
Yeah, 483,000 people have his level of top
in the private sector.
Top secret in the private sector alone. So I mean, how many countless people at companies such as Booz Allen have that kind of access? It's incredible.
Right. So the rumor has it he walked into the lunchroom and said, "Hey, you got private access? Can I get it?" 5 minutes later, he had it. I mean, that's the scrutiny here, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. We got a little problem. I mean, unless top secret isn't what I thought top secret is.
Right. And so, by the way, and you know, this guy is no fool. Let's be crystal clear here. Hong Kong just happens to be a special administrative region of China, which means red tape, no pun intended. So he went there for a purpose. He went there for a reason. He went there to elevate the status of this thing by saying, "Hey, look what I'm going to share with China." He gets into the Chinese culture, gets into Hong Kong, understands the rules and regulations there. This guy's a pretty smart guy. This isn't a guy that was suddenly rogue. He had a plan.
Well, you know, let's do some advanced thinking here. Maybe he isn't that smart. Maybe this was all the Chinese from the beginning. Okay, maybe they planted this idea. Maybe they told him, gave him a safe house in Hong Kong. Maybe this is the Chinese just playing the United States like a fiddle.
Are you alluding, Joe, to the fact that the Chinese government could be infiltrating the mighty United States of America, Joe?
Have you seen their latest warplane? Looks exactly like our warplane that they stole off the by getting into our defense contractors' networks. See the latest drone that they're coming out with? Gee, looks mysteriously like the Predator, right? Okay, I think that we are losing World War III. It's occurring right now, and it's been occurring for years, and we've been sidetracked by all this other stuff. But the fact is, the cyber war has been going on for years, and the United States is getting killed.
Right. So, again, we've talked about this on this show. I know I have on this show, and I know Gary has as well. And by the way, Gary would be all over this conspiracy theory dynamic. You know, he's the closet conspiracy guy. And this thing around China pulling the strings for this Marriott that could be this Edward Snowden is extremely interesting as we go forward. So by and large, this thing's going to play out. Prosecutors have 60 days to file an indictment against this guy that could lead to his extradition from Hong Kong. Like we said before, like I said before, that's not going to be a 10-minute exercise.
No, this could drag out. It all depends upon what kind of political pressure the White House, you know, our government has. And I'm not so sure that you know, our White House is full of cojones at the moment, right? So,
absolutely,
you might be very right about how long this will drag out.
Sure. And so on the related note, I mean, I know that again, a subject of wide speculation around who should be listening to me, you know, with regards to some of the NSA and some of the other things, the Verizon wireless records and all the rest of this stuff. My take on this thing is there's a process, right? There's a judicial process that says, look, I'm going to take I'm going to watch movement out there. And if I see something that is probable cause, I issue a warrant and then I go after you. What's wrong with that?
That's how it used to work, correct?
Right.
But I mean, here's the dynamic that's different. Okay. It used to be the United States was propping up the whole world. So if a person was hiding in some country that we were giving billions to, it took about 1 minute to go get that person. Now you got a person hiding in a country that we pray every week that they show up at the bond market, right? If China doesn't show up, United States is in trouble in a minute. So wait a second. All of a sudden, someone we're depending on, he's hiding there. Game changed. That's why all the U.S. leverage is gone. It's because we become a debtor nation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's unbelievable to me that, you know, and again, it's the media circus, right? I mean, that's perpetuating this thing. I mean, do you think that J. Edgar, again, who I don't want the government watching me, okay? I don't want them in my business. I don't want them on my phone calls. Okay, we all agree with that. What is the line that we need to draw here? Because that's the key to this whole thing, Joe. Is the NSA have to be effective? or efficient?
Both. I would imagine that they better be good at everything that they're attempting to do.
Right. And now we're going to ask them to be transparent. Transparency means in these kind of forums, that means I can pick that apart. I can go after pieces of information. You're going to get the folks that don't like us are going to get information about us. And I guess they could anyway, right? With spies and whatnot. But I don't. It's tricky, right?
It's all out there these days. You know, I mean, it seems like the age of secrecy and privacy has left us. You know, and not just at our government level. Look at our youth. I mean, they throw everything out there about themselves all day long out there on a constant stream of Facebook, right. Twitter, and blah, 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 their status update. You know, I'm getting out of the car. I'm going to bed. You know, I mean, everything is known. It's an age of complete transparency. I don't live like that. I don't have anything to hide, but I right. certainly don't go out of my way to tell everyone what I'm eating for breakfast, right? And it seems like the same thing is it's happening in our government now. Everyone wants this age of complete transparency. I want some secrets. I want some spies. And I want the United States doing some badass things. I want to get it done.
Absolutely. I mean, we need to have intelligence, okay? And at the end of the day, if we're going to give up if the United States of America is going to open up a Twitter account, okay, and tell everybody what we're doing every minute of the day, how are we going to be able to do the things that are necessary with rogue individuals or countries or nations?
I'll tell you the first time that I was really shocked by our transparency. And I can't remember when it was. It might have been the Gulf War I under George Bush, or maybe it was later. I can't remember. But I turn on the television, and there they are with a map showing our troop movements.
Right.
Okay. Now, it seems to me that the last thing that you want to show the world is your troop movements as you start an assault on Baghdad.
Yeah, absolutely. How is... again, it's back to what are we prepared to do from an efficient and a transparent dynamic as we move along in this social upheaval going forward? At the end of the day, where do you think this Snowden thing is going to play out, Joe?
I wouldn't want to be him. I can tell you that right now.
You think he's running, or is he eating fine meals in a lavish hotel?
He's having the Chinese version of Kobe beef, I can tell you that, right? I mean, he's not hiding in a closet somewhere. He's
not in a spider hole?
No, he's better than Saddam was in his last hours. Let's
put
it that way.
No kidding. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. We're going to come up here to a break in a little bit. I think I want to tackle... some issues after that. We've got a senator from the 7th District of Michigan, Patrick Kohlbeck. Patrick's going to call in. Wait till you hear this guy's bio. I mean, this guy is a sharp, has a sharp bio, sharp individual, a lot of great experiences. And we're going to talk to Patrick. We're going to work on this Medicaid expansion at the state level. He gave a speech some time ago. We're going to roll a little bit of it and get his opinions on where this is going, how it butts up against Obamacare and those kind of things. Did you read this guy's bio, Joe?
Yeah, impressive. I mean, I can't complain. He's also he's a fellow University of Michigan engineer. Now, I was mechanical side. I think he was aerospace side, but you got to love that about the guy. I mean, I was blown away, actually, when I read his bio. I was expecting to read the bio of a career politician. Instead, I'm reading about a U of M engineer, a highly successful businessman who just, and I'm looking forward to learning why, just jumped into politics.
Yeah, okay. So we'll turn it around after the break. I'll see you on the other side.
Wham! Talk
Talk 1600.
Hey, my blood brothers of freedom. This is Ted Nugent.
Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse.
God bless Ann Arbor and Wham Radio. I started doing interviews on Wham Radio around 1966. And I celebrate and promote the God-given individual right as guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, for us to defend ourselves, to keep and bear arms. And just to make sure everyone understands what we the people understand, keep can only mean one thing. That's it's mine and you can't have it.
Wham.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Some opponents of the Syrian president have agreed to give urgent military support to Western-backed rebels. Secretary of State John Kerry in Doha.
Assad chose to raise the stakes militarily. He chose to attack the Syrian people, but this time using Iranian supporters and using Hezbollah.
Kerry not offering specifics on the assistance, but saying it would help change a balance of power on the battlefield. And in the George Zimmerman trial, this call will be allowed to be played.
911, do you need police, fire, medical?
Maybe both. I'm not sure. There's just someone screaming outside.
What the judge is not allowing is expert testimony for the prosecution on who may be screaming in the background. The information could be crucial because Zimmerman claims he killed Trayvon Martin in self-defense. Fox News. We report. You decide.
I'm Gary Wellings, chief editor of The Current and The Daily Drift. With today's internet environment, it's easy to get information overload. The best way to process this information and cut through the internet chatter is to get your news delivered in a concise and effective manner. Get the news you need to know at thedailydrift.com. Check out The Daily Drift, one of the fastest growing websites around. At The Daily Drift, I find the local, state, national, and international stories you won't get from the mainstream media, and I make it easy for you to link to them. You'll also get original common sense opinions from local writers. You can even get a free subscription that will deliver a link to your email inbox every day for free. You'll also get instant access to all archived podcasts of The Drift Radio Show and links to the best articles, opinions, and websites. Go to www.thedailydrift.com. That's the news you'll need to know at thedailydrift.com.
Don't miss Theron's Saturday Night Rock and Rhythm Review. From the heat of Saturday night till the wee hours of the cool early morning, your fingers will be popping. It all kicks off at 4 p.m. with a special Saturday night edition of the Bone Conduction Music Show. Then from 6 to 8, it's Eddie's Caravan with Fast Eddie. At 8 o'clock, we explore America's roots with Radio John D's Greasy Skillet. Then, Johnny Danger invites you to go cruising with the best oldies from 10 to midnight. Dan Martin takes you across the pond for the best of the UK on London Calling at midnight. Followed by Del Villarreal's Rockabilly Fest, Go Cat Go from 2 to 4. Bleach down your slicks, pop your clutch, peel out, and get rubber in all four gears with Theron's Saturday Night Rockin' Rhythm Review. It all starts Saturday afternoon at 4, right here on the musical side of Wham! No matter where you are in the world, whether you have a radio or not, you can listen to Wham! Talk 1600. All you need is a computer or even a smartphone. Just go to whamradio.com and click on the Listen Live link. See the latest updates to whamradio.com and be sure to listen live. From Windsor to Grand Rapids, Miami to Alpena, wherever you may be, Wham! Talk 1600 is there. Online and streaming live. whamradio.com. You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
In for Gary Wellings today, Pat Tavolacci, Joe Vollmer. Thank you for catching our drift on behalf of young Gary. If you are in the listening audience, don't hesitate to call 734-822-1600. Would love to hear from you. So with that, Joe, who do we have a sponsor in the second half hour?
Would you know it? It's the Daily Drift website sponsoring this half hour.
Incredible.
So if you want to stay abreast of the best conservative articles on a daily basis, if you want to know what topics are on Gary Wellings' mind in advance of this Saturday radio show, then you need to visit www.thedailydrift.com for an excellent collection of the links to the very best news articles of the day. Now, these articles are picked by Gary's massive staff of himself. He personally picks out the very best stuff, so you don't have to weed through the internet to find out what to read. I mean, he just lays it out for you. So, and if you want to advertise on this radio show, you should email gary@thedailydrift.com.
Yeah, and you know, if you go on to the, every day, you get the articles locally, state, nationally, global, that you guys can use to figure out exactly what's going on out there versus what you're hearing in the normal mainstream media. So we are expecting Patrick, but we will get into another segment here while we're waiting for that to occur. I want to talk a little bit about the immigration bill. Suddenly, we are in a big hurry, if you're Harry Reid, to get this bill pushed through. You've heard of the senators that have all got together, and they're going through the different scenarios of how we're going to push this through. So, of course, with Washington, we're going to talk about adding money, and we're going to talk about changing laws. I mean, so let's play that clip, Derek, and then we'll get into the dialogue.
But American taxpayers may be spending a lot of money for that compromise. Tonight, ABC senior national correspondent Jim Avila takes us to the border. We asked him for the numbers. How much are American families going to spend to make all the politicians happy on this?
Here's reality at the border. America already spends $18 billion a year to stop illegal immigration like this. Most say it's working. 22 undocumented immigrants arrested in Houston just yesterday, caught by a record number of Border Patrol agents using drones, cameras, and fences like the ones we visited in El Paso this spring. More money spent along the border than is spent on all other law enforcement combined. But here's the rub. Today, the White House and the bipartisan authors of the Senate immigration bill agreed to spend $30 billion more taxpayer dollars over the next 10 years. Money many who live along the border say just isn't needed to stop illegal immigration.
Illegal immigrants, I can't say that I see them because of the new technology, the more hiring of Border Patrol agents. It's hard.
But in Washington, the expensive compromise survives to secure Republican votes, adding an additional 350 miles of border fence, doubling the number of Border Patrol agents to 41,000, one for every 1,000 feet of the Mexican frontier. A militarization of America's southern boundary, now labeled the border surge.
So, you know, the thing that at the beginning of the thing, the debate obviously is trying to get everybody together to pass this law. And let's face it, you know, if you're a Republican, you want something done here too, Joe, because at the end of the day, when you look at what happened in the last election from the presidential election side anyway, the difference was this category.
Yeah, the Republicans have no chance of ever winning another election without the Hispanic vote.
So you've got 11 million illegals living amongst us today. We're going to put this is what's incredible to me in the factoid that you got. We're going to have an agent every 1,000 feet, Joe.
That seems like you don't need any of the other things. It seems to me if you have an agent every 1,000 feet who's heavily armed, we don't need the drones, the fence. We don't need anything else if you've got an agent every 1,000 feet.
Yeah, and we've got this fencing, drones, radars. You know, I'm not sure what they're doing about the tunnels, right? I mean, you can have a Taj Mahal underneath to get all these folks through. But the bottom line is that at least there is some kind of consensus here that may push this thing over the edge. But what troubles me again is the cash piece, more cash. And new laws, Joe. We need a new law, like Putin needs a new reason to run for president.
Okay, here's my take on the cash part. I could have told you years and years ago when this topic started to boil up a little bit of immigration. I could have told you years ago the following, that I don't know what the fine details of this bill will be. amnesty and all the other issues.
Nor will the senators voting on it.
Yeah, I don't know or care. I guess I should say I don't care, but I don't know how that'll all turn out. But I could have guaranteed you one thing: it was going to cost us a fortune. and that is the thing that was an absolute certainty in all this. And what they say in there, $18 billion, right, is the current spend. And was this an incremental $30 billion or? It goes to $30 billion. I think it was an incremental $30 billion.
It's an incremental, right? Is what I heard.
Okay, so we're going to $48 billion now to protect. I don't know what it was. 365 miles of this, couple thousand mile border. So seems to be still like a 1,700 mile hole in the fence. You know, I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't get it.
Well, and what's interesting is they coined it the surge. Okay, that's our new. Yeah. Moniker now for if we're putting troops or if we're hiring agents or if we're building a border fence, it's a surge. Right?
You know what it is, Pat? It's a surge of cash.
That's right. Out of my pocket and your pocket, ladies and gentlemen, please, let's keep an eye on this. I like the fact that, you know, at least from a conservative perspective, we realize that there's another faction of voters out there. But when we talk about laws and really why politicians continue to reinvent them instead of enforce them. This deal that we're talking about here would wipe away the current law that states if those applying for a green card are illegal, and if they are illegally present in the United States at any point, they're off the roll here. They can't do it. That's what the current law says.
Mm-hmm.
The new law says, well, we don't. If you did something in the past, we're going to give you a path to citizenship. I'm not totally in the corner with that particular thing. Don't we want upstanding folks joining us in our country?
Well, there's no way that we should be knowingly allowing bad elements to stay in our country, period.
Right. So back to the whole law piece. So we're going to wrap this up because Patrick Colbeck called in. Want to get him on. So before I do get him on and pulled over to him, I want to read this bio. He was born and raised here in Michigan. He grew up in Westland and Livonia. He resides in Canton, Michigan. Got a wife of 16 years. Angie is his wife. Grew up in Livonia, as most intelligent thinking people do. He graduated from Catholic Central. And I think what's key here is that this individual has an aerospace engineering degree from the University of Michigan. Local guy, stayed local. He's also has a Bachelor of Sciences as well in aerospace engineering. And I think what's kind of key here, he was elected directly to the Senate in 2010 without previously holding any other elected office. So this guy went from private sector to public sector in a matter of minutes, generally speaking. So with that, I want to play this clip of Patrick, and then I want to talk to him a little bit about Medicaid expansion.
Left out there in the Senate. That's the Department of Community Health. The budget right now is held up by one fundamental question. Should we expand Medicaid from the current 100% of the federal poverty limit to 138% of the federal poverty limit? Implied with this question is that citizens in this pool would have better health, i.e., a healthier Michigan.
Patrick, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Hey, listen, we went back a little bit a few months ago to get that clip from you, but really wanted to talk to you about that particular thing. Why is it so important to have this debate?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is another surge, if you will, of the federal government. Kind of topical with what you guys are just talking about, and this is a surge in government control over what goes on within our states. And in a later discussion on the floor or a speech on the floor, I talk about how the states are the last line of defense against this monstrosity referred to as Obamacare.
Yeah,
one of the key tenets of that Obamacare right now and what we're debating in the Senate is called Medicaid expansion. That's Section 2001 of H.R. 3590, which is otherwise known as Obamacare.
And so why is it so critical? I mean, just for the viewers, why is it so critical for the states to have their ducks in a row when dealing with this issue? Because they can stop it, right or wrong?
The states can't stop it. I mean, the Supreme Court gave the option, said that the federal government could not force states to expand their Medicaid coverage. And so by default, that gives the states the option whether or not to pursue it or not. And right now, we're in the midst of a debate evaluating whether or not that's the best thing to do for the state of Michigan. And I'm a resolute no on that subject.
Are you getting the kind of resolute no buy-in from your constituents, or do we need to get on the blower and talk to the rest of the folks in Michigan and get this thing played out?
Well, I got to tell you, when I got elected into office, I won by 11% margin. And what I had on my platform around healthcare was talking about effective healthcare systems. And I railed against the federal healthcare law. And for me to go back on that would be to go back on the principles upon which I got elected. And I owe it to my voters to stand firm.
Wow. I don't know if you can hear me applauding, but that's absolutely what we need to be doing. I really appreciate that sentiment. When does this thing come to a head, and what can we expect before the end of the year, or can we expect anything except dialogue?
Well, for right now, it's in dialogue mode. The official bill is called House Bill 4714, has been referred to the Government Ops Committee in the Senate, and the discussion right now is that there's going to be a separate work group formed to evaluate what are all the different options on Medicaid expansion. And for my part, what I'm trying to do is reshape the discussion, not on different ways to expand Medicaid, but on how do you provide improved access to quality care. Now, when you say that you want to expand Medicaid, you're assuming that it's a government-run program. When you say, I want to improve access to quality care, now you open the door to private free market solutions. And that's really where I'd like to see the discussions go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, obviously, you know, it's back to the thing that we talked about earlier in the program, where we talked about competition and how critical it is to ensure that there's quality in every facet of the businesses that folks do. And
right.
We've seen time and time again that government takeovers, government handling, leaves a lot to be desired, doesn't it, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, I think there might be a decent analogy here. If you look at the federal government versus the states, and let's look at the topic of immigration and the federal government versus the state of Arizona, right? I mean, how long has that been dragging out?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, is that a decent analogy? What's going on in Arizona versus on the immigration side?
Well, when you realize that Obamacare is nothing to do about care and nothing to do about affordability, and it has everything to do with control, yeah, because that's exactly what's going on when the federal government, in a sense, attempts to usurp a state's right to go off and provide protection for its citizens when they're not doing the job that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, understand, and thanks for coming on and talking a little bit about that. I want to give you you know, the opportunity not only to talk about this particular issue, but anything else that, you know, you feel is a burning platform for what we need to be looking after here in not only in your district, which, by the way, is pretty substantial. I mean, you're talking about from Northville to Gros Isle, right?
Yeah, pretty much the western southern edge of Lane County.
So you're dealing with a lot of diversity in what you're doing. You said you had quite a substantial victory. What other burning platforms are out there, Patrick, that we need to be aware of here in Michigan that we need to be rallying around besides this Medicaid expansion?
Well, there's a lot of areas where the federal government's trying to poke their nose into what has been reserved to the people or to the state for our Constitution. One of those areas, frankly, is education. And for me, that's a burning issue. I serve on the Senate Education Policy Committee, and one of the topical discussions of the day right now on that subject is around Common Core. And I don't know if you've gone into any detail on that subject, but this is another area where it's time to wait a second. Michigan Department of Education had decided to adopt Common Core standards back in June of 2010, and the more we find out about Common Core standards, the more there is to be a little bit concerned about the influence of the federal government on the process, frankly, the influence of international bodies on the process, and the basic assertion of whether or not these standards are actually going to help us improve the quality of our education or not.
So generally, we're, you know, Common Core to me means rubber stamped education and pushing things through the process, pushing people and students through the process instead of making the process uniquely qualified to educate our people. Is that relatively accurate?
Well, there's a lot of different components associated with Common Core, and you know, you got to break it out between the standards element and then the process element gets into kind of the how do you actually instruct the students to achieve those standards? One of my concerns, and you know, you brought up process, is the fact that a lot of these process requirements are actually baked into the standards. As you mentioned earlier, my background is engineering.
Right.
I've written many a specification in my life. That's what I used to do. I have a lot of.
I know a lot of you and your brethren, and they and so I'm in supply chain, and they kill me. But anyway, that's a whole different issue.
Yeah, but when you write that, I mean, there's a little bit of art to spec writing. I mean, in particular, how do you get to the point where you define what you want rather than how you want it? You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
So there's a for example, there's this for first grade math standard, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from parents on this. But where they started to roll out Common Core. There's a math standard in first grade where, you know, the end objective is you just want kids to figure out what that 4 plus 4 equals 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's actually written into the standard, but the standard goes beyond saying we want to demonstrate that 4 plus 4 equals 8. It goes on to define that there you have to also demonstrate that there's four different ways of demonstrating that 4 plus 4 equals 8. And my concern with that is, first of all, you've got limited time in a classroom.
Right.
You got to focus on the end objective, not the means to an end objective. That's one thing I learned in project management land. I don't care about the interim milestones as much as the end milestone.
Oh, absolutely.
And so when they're starting to do this and devote classroom time to focus on how rather than what, first of all, it demeans the teaching profession from my perspective, because that's what teachers go to school for, is to learn how to teach.
Sure.
Each kid is different. You have to apply different methods to different kids, and whatever rings a bell, that's the approach that you apply for that student. But it also goes into teaching assessments later on down the road, because these same standards are going to be used to determine whether or not a teacher is effective or not. And my concern is, because I am an aerospace engineer, I like to think that people that are flying in airplanes are more concerned that I knew what the right answer was when it came to calculating the strength of materials on the aircraft, rather than that I knew four different methods to calculate the right strength, right?
Right.
So if you're going off and assessing a teacher's effectiveness, for example, do I really want to check the box and say that the teacher met four out of five objectives if four of those objectives were simply how to get to the right answer and the kid still doesn't know what the right answer is?
Right.
And yeah. So it's got big implications across the board, I think.
Yeah, and I could, this is Joe, I could really back up your point. My wife is a fourth grade teacher in Brighton, and yep. You know, she's been teaching 20 years, and I've watched her job description change over the years, where it seems now that just getting through teaching all the things that are mandatory and teaching them in the way that they are supposed to be taught or she's being told to teach them now has changed right. So much from how she used to operate as a teacher. She's top shelf, but her ways of doing things seem to be restrained.
Right, and it really, I got to tell you, it's analogous to what's going on in Obamacare, because what's happening is now you're not worried about healthy outcomes for the patients as long as you've checked the box on different procedures that you're supposed to go through. And it's just like with Obamacare, when you get into Common Core, when you get into the federal government influence on it, it starts getting into more about control than it does about the actual end result. And, I'm proud of one thing that I've done in regards to the budget process here in the state of Michigan. And this is something for some of your listeners to look forward to come September timeframe, the end of September. But what I've done is I've restructured my budgets in state police and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to actually start tracking the metrics or the outcomes that we're expecting for all the money that we're putting towards all the core services in these departments. So we've started shifting the perspective, saying here's a bunch of money, as long as what you're doing fits this noun and in the title of the line item in the budget that the dollar's associated with, you're okay. And we went beyond that and said, no, 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 guys, it's not just about the dollars. It's not just about the title of the line item. It's about what are the outcomes that we're expecting for this money. And I think the same thing should apply to education or healthcare or anything else across the board.
Yeah, well, and accountability at the end of the day, right?
You got it, right. It just
blows our mind here, you know, why the accountability factor isn't in that. We've got a few more minutes. I wanted to get into another subject with you. Are we going to ever fix our roads, and who's going to pay for it?
Well, yeah, I'm glad
besides
you
brought
that up, 'cause that's another one of those major projects I've been working on in parallel with the budget process. Is, you know, back when the governor first proposed the need for $1.2 billion in additional funding for the state, I highlighted the fact that, you know, in our January revenue estimate that we had experienced about a 5.4% increase in general fund dollars that were available for our budget, because we are growing again as an economy. We actually had about $472 million in additional general fund revenue. Great. Over last year. And so I said, Governor, why can't we go off and apply that money to our highest priority item? And if roads are our highest priority, let's put it to that. And by the way, that wouldn't affect school funding at all. School funding has got its own separate revenue stream. And it was put out there. And what I ended up doing later on is evolving that into a pretty robust trade study. I said, here are all the different ways to get to $1.2 billion. And taxes and fees are one way of doing it. And I said, I don't want to talk about those guys. They got PhDs in Lansing that love to talk about ways of taxing and improving fees and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to talk about that. Let's look at other things. And appropriations policy was the first item up for discussion that I wanted to zero in on. That $472 million, what are we doing with it? Where does it go? And oh, by the way, in addition to that $472 million, I think there was about $287 million that was in lapse funds, i.e. money that was budgeted last year, but it wasn't spent, so it goes back into the general fund for spending this year. So we're well over $700 million when you start looking at it that way. And yep. So now we're starting to inch up pretty close to that $1.2 billion figure, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So then, you know, we had our May consensus revenue estimate, and guess what happened during that revenue estimate? They found out that we had $700 million more in additional revenue than what we had thought. So now you're over $1.4 billion.
Holy mackerel.
So the question is, if the goal was $1.2 billion for roads, and by the way, they did end up putting about $350 million towards roads in the last budget, but the question is, where did all that money go? Was it towards our highest priority item? I know some of it went to increasing our money for film incentives. Some of it went to the budget stabilization fund. But we got to start asking those questions about what are our priorities and are we spending in accordance with our priorities.
Hey, listen, unfortunately, we didn't get as much time to talk as we wanted to. Patrick, I really appreciate you calling in. I hope you can get back on the show with Gary, who's certainly a better interviewer than I ever will be, and we can get into some more things, including that are going to affect us here in Michigan, as well as what your aspirations are. So thanks for that, Patrick.
All right, thanks, Joe. Okay.
Thank
you.
All right, thanks, guys. Next week, Mr. Welling's back in studio. Have a wonderful day.